What is going on, everybody, and welcome back to the FDN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. As usually is the case, we were off for the offseason. We are now in the midst of draft season in the middle of February, and we are ready to get you going. I'm your host, Vlad Sedler, at RotoGut on the X on the Twitter. And in a minute, I'm going to introduce my new co-host. Of course, our good friend, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, is he's not in the content business this year, but we're going to be lucky enough to see him in Vegas this year when we go draft for the NFBC main event. So, you know, Matty is a close friend and obviously wishing him lots of luck and success. Not too much luck if he's in my leagues. But before I introduce our new guy, let me tell you a little bit about what we've got going on this year and just like an overview of the podcast. So obviously this is the FTN Fantasy podcast. FTNFantasy.com is the site. We've got an amazing team this year. We had a draft guide that launched in late December. Phenomenal content and articles, projections, rankings, everything you could possibly need. Added some cool tools this year with the Prospect Vault, off-season tracker. We've got Underdog best ball rankings. Underdog is our sponsor for the podcast this year. And basically, over the course of this preseason, with this weekly podcast, we're basically going to focus a lot on draft strategy and roster construction, a lot of player analysis, rankings, and tiers. And most importantly, we're going to talk a lot about helping you, what I think is the major part of this game, is identifying those market inefficiencies. And market is, of course, the ADP, average draft positions. And yeah, hitters and pitchers that we believe are super under or overvalued by the market. And we'll just sort of weave that all in together. Over the course of the preseason and the in-season, me and my new co-host will mix in guests, people from our team that you probably know, Eric Cross and Michael Govier and Lucas Beery, Jake Kuchek, Adam Young. And yeah, it's going to be loaded. Tide Whitestone, of course. And then we'll have guests, you know, from the industry, helpful baseball analysis. So all in all, we are here to help you crush. FTNFantasy.com is the site. The active promo code right now for 5% off is Seager5, and that's for Fantasy Baseball Plus or the High Stakes Package. Now, at this point, I would love to introduce my man. I've known him for several years. We meet every year in Las Vegas. He's somebody who I've grown quite close to and quite fondly of almost immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, let me give you a quick intro about him first. His name is Jason Anthony. You'll find him on the X at Booms62, B-O-O-M-S-62. So make sure to give him a follow. Jason lives up in the Bay Area. He is a huge fan of all the teams up in that, you know, in the area, which shall remain nameless for a little bit. Family man, West Coaster like me, obviously, we're, you know, doing this podcast in late in the evening, a couple of young kids like myself. And Jason, he crushes in the NFBC. You know, he's finished in the top 15 of the main event three times over the last few years. He's got 9 league championships. He finished second overall in the auction championship a couple years ago. And just like an all-around, like, really good dude. But what's really cool is he also used to be a pro golfer. And it is something that a few people have asked me about. But before we get into any and all that, Jason, sorry for the long intro, but what's up, man?
Vlad, my man, you're making me blush. It's going to be a hard intro to live up to, but just honored to be part of this pod with you, man. Your whole team at FTN has been fantastic. Welcome me with open arms. Excited to talk some baseball with you.
Yeah. So first of all, I do have a couple of golf related questions for you, because I am probably, even in the fantasy baseball industry, probably the least knowledgeable person on golf. But first of all, like, what have you been doing as far as drafts this season, prep and all that kind of stuff? And what do you usually play? You know, like, what type of formats do you prefer?
So I'm really trying to limit my early season drafting. I kind of got too hot and heavy in the DCs the past couple of years, and I got too many teams to manage. DCs, obviously, you're not doing fab, but you're setting your lineups, and you're not able to optimize everything when you have too many teams. So I really wanted to do more research and then kind of put the player pool together myself, and then start jumping in DCs this month and start kind of testing myself on the player pool. So I'm doing my second DC right now. I've done one OC, and then going to do a main here once those open up, and an auction, and I kind of love them all, man. There's no draft I don't like.
By the way, are you doing the CLQ? It's the Toby Batflip Crazy's amazing idea that he has with, for the Champion League's qualifier. Are you going to be joining that?
I am. I'm actually doing my in the middle of my draft champion CLQ right now. I think I'm in round 15, and it's a lot of fun. It definitely everybody said it, but it adds a little pressure to each pick. So it's exciting. Really, really looking forward to that event, and hopefully I'm in the top 15 at that auction table next year on Sunday night.
Oh man, it would be something to, especially now we're looking at like 100 plus entries in that thing. I actually started my draft champions qualifier last week, and it's kind of a really slow draft. So it's a 4-hour one. It's going super slow, but someone threw a wild card. So the day after Corbin Burns signed, was traded to the Baltimore Orioles, he went third overall in my draft. And so that's my CLQ draft. I had the 9 pick, and I just, you know, popped Spencer Strider. He was still sitting there. So yeah, that was off to a good start. So now at this point, I'm just trying not to mess it up.
Well, Christmas in February is never a bad thing, Vlad.
No, not at all. So real quick on the golf stuff, you played college at Fresno State, then you played a few years pro up in Canada, and then you won some stuff. And I was just curious, and I looked you up on Google. I was like, damn, man, I didn't know my friend was this good. So like, what's the whole golf story over the years in a nutshell?
Yeah, kind of a late bloomer with golf. Walked on to Fresno State, earned a scholarship, and then turned pro out of college. Played on the Canadian tour for 4 years, where baseball terms is kind of like double A of the professional golf tour. Never really made it past that. The lifestyle was actually quite difficult, living out of your suitcase, going from city to city. Something I would never trade for a million years, though. I learned so much about myself. Got to meet a ton of amazing friends, got to see a ton of amazing cities. My last year up there, we actually took an RV all the way from Victoria to Calgary for 8 weeks with me and three other guys, and it was just an amazing experience. So ended up quitting golf, didn't touch a club for a year. Got my amateur status back and started competing on high level amateur tournaments. And I'm still doing that, enjoying the game much more that it's not a job anymore.
Do you play any like golf, fantasy golf or DFS, or are you pretty much just baseball and football?
Baseball, football, there's not enough time to do any golf for me. I just really hyper focused on baseball. And I love football when it comes around. Try not to let baseball wane. It's tough, but I'm definitely a passion is fantasy baseball. I'm pretty sure if I had to choose between golf and fantasy baseball, it's not a hard choice. I'd be in Vegas doing fantasy baseball.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. And then as far as your allegiances to teams, like, where you grew up and what teams you like growing up, I mean, like Giants?
Yeah, born and raised Giants, Niners, and Warriors. It's amazing what fantasy baseball can do, get a Dodgers and a Giants fans on here talking shop and getting along. But a rough time for the Giants right now. I won't throw any football in except go Niners, Super Bowl. Excited for this Sunday. But yeah, a Giants fan. Diehard, rough couple of years, and really even more difficult watching the Dodgers spend $1.5 billion this offseason.
But unfortunately, money doesn't buy championships. And
no,
I guess
it doesn't.
Yeah, if you don't really, a lot of people don't count the 2020. I mean, listen, we won it, but I'm not one of those stout, like, oh my gosh, it's not fair. Of course it counts. But honestly, it's just shocking to me. And again, this is probably a topic for another podcast. Like, the last time we really won a true championship was I was a kid. I mean, it was 1988. It was Kirk Gibson. Like, these guys are, elderly dudes now who are on these teams. And so like, man, it's been so long. And of course, just loading up on these guys doesn't mean, that anything is, nothing is ever in the bag. Right. I mean, they can even get to the World Series and lose to the upstart Baltimore Orioles, the Corbin Burns complete game shutout in game 7. Like, you just never know. And that's kind of the beauty of it all. And with fantasy baseball, we're getting into a period of time where a lot of us are drafting these, you know, we've been drafting these 15 team draft champions, these 50 rounders, getting really familiar with the player pool. And it's this time of year where we've got like industry leagues, Tout Wars, Labor, TGFBI. There are going to be a lot of screenshots, a lot of boards, a lot of discussion, you know, people talking about projections, like just all this stuff. It's really like the heart of the season. And especially after Sunday, right? Because like once the Super Bowl's over, it's going to be just like, you know, the hotness on it.
It's going to take off like hotcakes. It's exciting time of year. There's nothing better than draft season. I can safely say that.
Yeah. And the other thing I totally forgot about is we'll usually get our little Twitter wars too, right? Because like that's when everybody's like kind of puffing their chest and, you know, they've got the best, you know, the best plays and the best boards. And yeah, I might mix it up a little bit too. You know, I'm a little competitive and can get heated at times. So I try to keep it cool, but, you know, can't always hold it in.
Yeah.
And so real quick today or on this episode, we are going to talk about the first baseman and third baseman. So we're going to talk about positional tiers. We're going to break some of these guys down. We're going to try to run through this within the next hour and just kind of give you the highlights of everything. But before I do, just kind of want to ask you about kind of like the best way to describe like your overall draft style in NFBC. Like, you know, I know myself, like when I'm in a league and I see you in it, especially, you know, where we've been in main events together against each other and, you know, you've beat me quite a few times. And then of course I don't like drafting against you in the, you know, the 12 team OCs. We end up kind of a lot of the same targets and fighting over these guys. But you know, how do things change for you year to year based on the player pool? Do you have like a certain style as far as risk? Like, you know, what's kind of the usual Jason plan?
Well, you know, fantasy wise, you're learning every year how to get better. I'm evolving as a fantasy player. You know, when you first start, you see these shiny new toys and the upside. And I've kind of, the more I've played is I'm kind of, risk is taking a little back seat, whether it's injury risk, like a Jazz Chisholm or skills risk with an Ellie De La Cruz. I'm trying to avoid those type of guys and kind of getting more righted in, safe foundation guys, and taking a little more risk later. It's a challenge. Anytime you get an early pick to bust, it really puts you in a hole. I guess I'm really trying to focus on building up a stable batting average hitting wise and then stable ratios pitching wise early. Pretty simple strategy, but it's not easy to do. There's a lot of landmines out there to really kind of put your team in a hole.
By the way, at ftnfantasy.com and our, you know, wonderful draft guide, we had a bunch of guest writers. So people in the industry, or not even in the industry, just people that are really good players, contributed columns and guides. And we kind of had a nice little mix of, you know, type of strategy articles. But one that was in there was by Steve Weimer, who's a very consistent high level NFBC player. Dude is super humble too. It's interesting, like how many of the best fantasy players in the world, like the people that are consistently winning, they're also usually really good people and really humble, but Steve is one of them. And he wrote a phenomenal piece on the site, just about, you know, positional scare. I'm sorry, like category scarcity, right? Like about, you know, just kind of how it's something we've always dealt with, I think, over the years. Like we all have our own personal biases and there are ways that we construct and build our rosters where we are perennially deficient in certain things, right? Like some of us might come out of a draft always low on stolen bases or, you know, this or that. And then there are like kind of the sexier categories, like the home runs and the strikeouts that people chased. And they don't have that sort of overall perspective, especially for NFBC competitions, like the main event, like the online championship that has that overall component where you're trying to hit 80 plus percentile overall in all these categories and have balance so you can win your league, so you can compete for some overall money. And the positions, I'm sorry, the categories that always just kind of seem to go overlooked by, I guess, I don't want to say the masses, but just like in general, it just seems are those the ratios and the average categories, right? I mean, there's just so few strong contributors to ERA or WHIP, right? Like, you know, I mean, it's very infrequent that you have a guy post a sub 3 ERA over a full season. And a lot of times those guys are unpredictable, right? I mean, nobody thought Blake Snell was going to, you know, have the type of, you know, year he had. And just every year there are examples of it, but it's really hard to nail down. And same thing with batting average, right? Like if you're just grabbing too many of those, you know, the Jazz Chisholms, Max Muncy's, you know, Jake Burgers, O'Neill Cruz's, you know, and you're playing that game, we're like, oh, well, I'll just get Luis Arias and he'll just fix my batting average. And then, you know, he gets hurt and then you're completely screwed. So, you know, just a long way to say how important ratio categories are. I mean, is there something you're doing specifically to kind of address that year in, year out, or are you extra mindful of them in any way?
Absolutely. Mindful of them. The two categories you are never fixing coming out of a draft on FAB is batting average and WHIP. There's nothing out there that can fix those. If you don't address that in the draft and you think you're going to pick up some Michael Brantley type that's going to carry your batting average, there's so many batting average sinks later in the draft and on FAB that can put up some stats, but you're really sacrificing batting average. It's usually going down, not up throughout the year. And WHIP's kind of a similar concept on the pitching side. Anybody coming up, usually a young pitcher, unproven and, you know, not throwing strikes, pitching to contact, you know, a lot of strikeouts, a lot of flash, but usually their WHIP is not helping you. So those are the two categories to really put a focus on. And they kind of, WHIP especially kind of, I think, sits in the background when you're looking at pitching stats. But you need to really focus on it, in my opinion, to really be successful in these overall contests.
And as we get through these weeks in the preseason, through February, through March, we will definitely get there. We'll really do a deep dive on the pitchers, help you identify the players that that we think are going to make a difference this year. So about the first baseman, the third baseman, it's just the way that I typically organize a series that I call positional tiers. It's, you know, we're looking at usually at NFBC ADP. For the most part, we're looking at draft champions to start, and we'll soon be getting into the main event season. And obviously, I think that's a little bit of time away. We still have spring training to go, of course. But, you know, right now we're going to be looking at ADP from, it's basically the middle of January through the date of our recording, which is February 7th. So about 22 drafts. It's a nice sample. And one of the things we talked about, we did a little, you know, pre-show warm-up game is how, you know, ADP is so volatile, right? You know, Mike Mager, the great Mike Mager, fantastic NFBC player. He writes a weekly article about the ADP, the market and, you know, the movement week to week. We're looking at like a Michael Bush over the last few weeks, his ADP, how much it's, you know, it's risen with just, you know, how volatile things are. Once guys signed somewhere, like automatically these guys are moving up. As soon as you see Chapman, Bellinger sign, you'll see a few spots move up on ADP. But we were talking about how, you know, looking at a draft champion's ADP list now, it's not, you know, it's not fully reactive, right? Because there are drafts that are still going based on, you know, that have reacted to certain things that have happened over the last week, but those aren't reflected in the ADP results, right?
Yeah. There's, especially with the slow drafts, like the 4 hour you're doing, it's been going on for now, what, 10 days, 10 days, and you probably got another 10, 15 to go before that data is actually live on ADP data. So it doesn't really reflect what's happening currently in the market. There's very few fast DCs that really go. So the market on DC ADP is definitely behind a little bit. It all depends what data you want to look at. And DC right now is probably the most valuable data. You can throw some OC data, but, you know, 12 teams are drafted differently than 15 teams. So it's kind of pick your flavor and kind of make sure you know what you're looking at.
Yeah. So so what we did was, first thing we did is we grouped kind of like the first two tiers, we would call them, right? Because just, you know, quick little overview, you've got Freddie Freeman as the only first baseman kind of in an island in the middle of the first round. And then you have this glut of talented players, mostly stolen baseless. Actually, no, that's not quite accurate, but you've got two Atlanta Braves right around the 1-2 turn in Matt Olson, Austin Riley. You know, Matt Olson somewhere between 14 to 17 ADP usually, Austin Riley closer around 20. And then you've got Bryce Harper coming back, had that phenomenal season last year. And then Jose Ramirez. So all these guys are going around the turn. And, you know, I mean, starting with Freeman, the guy returns fantasy value in the first round, like pretty much every single season. He's always healthy. Now he's got Otani around him with Mookie Betts. and he's just phenomenal, right? But he's kind of, you know, kind of alone where he is. And it's really never a bad pick, right? Like if you're picking like eighth or ninth, sometimes it's a tough decision, right? Like if you have one draft and you have to choose between Freeman and Soto and Otani or these guys, you almost have to look ahead to who might be your targets in the upcoming rounds, right? Because that's, you know, we're kind of looking at roster construction more beyond just that first round pick.
Yeah. Like we were talking about batting average, how many guys can write in a 300 batting average, basically guaranteed? Freddie Freeman's about as safe as it can get. It's a little boring and it doesn't feel sexy, but you chipped in 20 something steals last year too. 120 runs. I mean, the stats across the board are just incredible. It's not a pick you make it, you fist pump, but man, it is such a safe pick to start your team with.
Yeah. And so Freddie Freeman and Matt Olson, they were the two guys that, that earned over $40. I'm looking at, you know, I look at the Razzball Player Rater, good work there that Rudy Gamble does. And so those two obviously earned 40 plus. Matt Olson, dude, second overall player last season, or earned 46 and a half bucks. And the numbers were insane, right? I mean, you're just looking at like almost 140 ribbies, 127 runs, 54 bombs, had an actually, you know, positive average. And that whole unit is intact, right? You got Michael Harris is getting better, you know, with Ozzie Albies having a massive season, Ronald Acuna with the greatest fantasy season of all time. And then Austin Riley there in the mix, right? And Austin Riley, like all of his, you know, StatCast data is like, you know, up in the 90th percentiles off the charts. It's a really good group. But am I wrong? I don't know how in tune you are with like, you know, what other people are feeling on the market, but like, I kind of get the feeling that not everybody's into Olson, and it, like just expecting like a 20% reduction or whatever, but you know, from those massive numbers, but like, isn't he just like poised for another massive year? And could we be undervaluing him the way we did Freeman all those years where he's just like, should be a first rounder?
I mean, I actually was blown away when I dove into his numbers. I don't think I've seen something supported as far as how good he actually was from looking at these numbers. The K rate dropped, the barrel rate went up, the hard hit rate went up, the exit velocity went up, everything across the board. I mean, the only concern with him would be batting average possibly, but the 283 batting average, the K rate's in line. BABIP wasn't crazy. The guy is a monster. And I was discounting and I'm regretting it because I think you're poised for another monster year. And even if it is regression, I mean, regression to 45 homers and 110 runs and 120 RBIs is still pretty good.
Yeah. And the other thing was the amount of like just plate appearances that that team accumulated. So one of the things that I do in, you know, my work with the VDP projections, of course, you're not going to, you know, we're not going to start the show without or have a show without me mentioning them because it's all I've been grinding on for the last month. But so they're based on, well, they're my bias and tweaks to an already legit amazing system created by our chief data officer, Frank Brank, who's been crushing it in the, you know, MLB modeling for DFS and for betting for like over a decade. And he does this for season long as well, but it's always just been kind of under the radar. So I'm working with his data and then going in team by team and making basically tweaks every single day, being very reactive to the news and keeping an overall component of the entire league's expectations. And my whole point of saying that is the amount of plate appearances that we're getting from teams that just continue to just kind of turn the lineup over, like, you know, Atlanta, Houston, Texas, the Dodgers, those teams all had like 6,200 plus at bats. I'm sorry, plate appearances last season. Whereas, you know, you got teams like the A's, White Sox, they're under 6,000. Just such a huge difference with 200 to 300 extra at bats or plate appearances per season. And then you just have that quality at the top of the lineup with Acuna and Riley and Albies. And so that's why you're kind of seeing these like massive run and RBI totals. And that's one of the problems that I have with like, you know, kind of like standard projection systems. They're not really accounting for this, right? They're like, you know, kind of playing it safe and there's not a lot of risk, but like, it's much more likely if a guy like Matt Olson, who is in this lineup, the last two seasons, he's played 162 plus games. I mean, 162 on the dot each season, never missed a game. Obviously, we're not projecting him for like 162 games again, but even then, if he does not go on the IL and he's just a part of that lineup, it would be an absolute shock if the guy is not producing 100 plus runs, 100 plus RBIs. It's just kind of part of the mix. So, sorry, man, that's going to be something I do a lot on the show is kind of rant. So you can just stop.
Oh, no, all good. Great information, man. like I said, I was blown away when I looked at it, and definitely more of a target. I guess the only downside with most of the first baseman is the lack of speed. Coming out of the first three, four rounds when you need a pitcher and a hitter, and a lot of stuff, having one steal, it is a tough build, but I think it's worth it with that profile.
And that's another interesting thing is at that turn. So if you are in a 15 teamer and you are looking at like guys like Yordan Alvarez, not a first baseman, obviously, or third baseman, and then you got Olson and you got Harper and you know, Jose Ramirez, he's kind of the only guy that gets you stolen bases. So there are ways that you can do it, right? You can start, you know, maybe you don't want to start Olson, Harper, they're two first basemen, but it can be done. You could work with it, but then you're almost kind of always chasing saves like all throughout, or you might even be tempted for like an Asturias later on. But could you work with that ever? Could you take like an Olson, Yordan, you know, Harper, you know, Riley, something like that, and just work with like no steals? But Harper gets you 10, 15.
Yeah, I think Harper's a little unique in that group, that he does run a little bit. It's really hard to pass up on the average, the homers, and all those guys in that group, but I'd be challenged to pass up pitching and speed in the first two rounds. I do not feel myself putting that type of build together. It'd be one of those hitters and either a starting pitcher or J-Ram or another speed guy that would have to get pushed up.
By the way, the Phillies, at least, and I'm looking at, again, our projections at FTN and just what Philly has in store for them, just as far as offensive, like overall production. This is a very deep lineup, right? Like this is even guys like Bryson Stott and JT Realmuto are hitting like lower in the order, right? And Realmuto is just a, kind of a shell of his former self, but he's still, you know, the second or third top catcher on, you know, fantasy draft boards. And that, you know, this offense is super deep. They're going to score a ton of runs. If these guys just stay healthy, remember last year, they got off to a super slow start. Harper wasn't playing. They had Bryson Stott leading off. You know, Nick Castellanos was struggling. He wasn't himself. Even Kyle Schwarber wasn't really, you know, getting going. And Harper came in and just kind of everything flowed. And they made a run there. And obviously, you know, playoffs. But this is a really legit offense. So this is, you know, it's a what I'm trying to say is sorry. First podcast, just getting warmed up here. Bryce Harper is like, you know, legit MVP candidate, right?
Yeah. Really is. He only played, he didn't play a full season coming off that injury last year. And he obviously wasn't right the first half, but once he got healthy, guy's a monster. And those, you know, 10 to 12 steals he chips in at first base just matters so much. But I mean, you could definitely see a Matt Olson type year. I don't know if he's ever going to get to that 50 home run mark, but the RBIs, the runs, the batting average, it's a great offense. Like you said, definitely a incredible player and incredible value right there.
So then just looking at the rest of that through the first two tiers. And so we're looking at guys between picks 1 to 45 overall. So 45 is the end of the third round. You still got Rafael Devers in the early 20s. You got Ellie De La Cruz, who we're not going to get into it too much today because he's, you know, he's been talked about pretty much everywhere on Twitter, on podcasts, like you name it. Maybe we can touch on him in the middle infield episode, right? Because he's eligible there too. Pete Alonso and Vlad Guerrero right around the end of the second round. And then Gunnar Henderson, he's the last guy, kind of also on a little bit of an island, but because he's third and short eligible, I think most people obviously are going to play him at short if they can and still kind of load up with a corner there. But talk to me a little bit about Gunnar Henderson, because, I mean, he scored 100 runs as a rookie. I admit it. I was down. I was not in on Gunnar Henderson. He was like going around 100 ADP, and I just wasn't buying it. And he just proved me wrong. And I think there's just a lot of swag, even though it's young swag, with this Orioles lineup. There's a lot to like, and Gunner's going to be at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, it's just like a good vibe there. It's hard to really put that in context. I know it doesn't really do good for fantasy talking about a good vibe, but you know, Gunnar started out slow, and everybody that faded him was pointing fingers and laughing. And then they look at the end of the year, and they're, you know, you don't hear from him again. What he did the last 4 months of the season, if he can put that together for 6 months, you're talking, you know, first round player next year. The guy, speed, power, runs a great lineup. Dual eligibility, third and short, that's valuable come season. Fab injuries doing that. I think he is a great value where he's going out, and I'm completely attacking him when I can. You got to be in the right part of the draft to get him. And I haven't been there so far, but I'd gladly take him if he's sitting there for me.
Quick one for you, since they're all middle infielders, and maybe we'll do it, you know, more in depth next time, next week. But you're on the clock and you're looking at Gunnar Henderson, Jose Altuve, and Bo Bichette. Do you have a lean there? Because I'm still conflicted sometimes.
It's Gunnar for me. It's between Gunnar and Bichette. I'm not an Altuve guy. Just the age and maybe slowing down a little bit on the base paths. And obviously the issue with Bichette is nobody knows if he's going to run. You know, goes from 20 steals to 6 steals. His batting average is elite, but the all-around stats Gunnar can produce. I'm leaning Gunnar, but I'm going to take a hard look at Bichette and really have to kind of dial in and see which I want to do.
So in the it's like a tier three group, right? So this is, these are just, it's just three guys, legit just three guys. They are going around 60, 70 overall. And actually, no, one of them is going like 50, and that's Royce Lewis. So we're talking about guys at the end of the fourth round, 15 teamers, early fifth, and then fifth, sixth round in 12 teamers. And this is a very kind of shady group because they all could, you know, they all could return first round value. The second guy in this group is Cody Bellinger. He was on the borderline of that. He was a top 20 hitter last year. It was magic. No one believed it. People thought, you know, Cody's dead. Cubs revived him in a really very odd kind of way. And then you got Manny Machado, the third guy of the group, ADP around 70. And I think we all know, and I've said this before, or I have at least thought it, like if Manny Machado, if there's good news of him just being ready to go to start the season, that ADP is shooting up. When I've been doing drafts in January, early January, and passing on him at like 75 overall, and I'm like, that might come back to bite me. Like, you know, he's like a risk, feels like a risk worth taking around that point. So let's just touch on these three guys real quick. If you have any favorites, what you think?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love Royce, he's that shiny new toy I'm probably avoiding this year. I actually picked him up in Fab and spent quite a bit of money on him last year in multiple leagues. Unfortunately, got injured, but the last month he came back and really produced. Probably want to see it another year. It seems like recently his ADP's fallen, so if it gets down another round, I'm going to be interested. One for me is Machado. He is not a fourth or fifth round player. He's a third round player, came off a down year, an injury. Guy just produces every year, power, a little speed, but not much. But I think like you're saying, if he's there at pick 75 and you pass at him, you're going to regret it come into the season.
And I just have like a little sort of gut vision on this. The Padres are going to be a lot better than people think. I forget what their win total is, but that would be something I'd be interested in betting because I think they are being super underrated. And I think people are overrating the fact that they haven't done anything with that bottom of the lineup. Like if you go to Roster Resource and you're seeing dudes like, who the frick is Cal Mitchell, Matthew Batten, Jose Azucar, you're like, what are these guys doing? If Machado's back healthy, you got a full season out of Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, dude is hitting like 290 every season. Haesung Kim, who also people are expecting to kind of, you know, dip down a little bit. You know they're going to dip into the free agent pool a little bit. They're going to add a couple guys. They got Mike Schilt there. They added great pitching. Like if it really comes down to the pitching, if Musgrove, Darvish stay healthy, Michael King is what they expect. This is going to be a lot better team than people think. So I'm kind of, I started off the beginning of draft season being like out on the Padres. Now I'm kind of in to them. And I think Machado being healthy is going to be a real key to that.
Yeah, fun team. Top five of the lineup, top four of the lineup's really fun. The bottom four is not so much fun right now. But like you said, free agency is still going on. And I can't see them going into the season with the two outfielders they have next to Tatis right now. So they, you know, you throw an Eddie Rosario or someone else like that in there, all of a sudden the lineup looks good, better, deeper, and just that many more opportunities for Machado to produce.
Yeah, honestly, it just takes like one guy. And by the way, Luis Camposano is fun. He can definitely be fun. So we can talk about him in the catcher episode. All right, the next group are the guys that kind of round out the top 100. And this is Paul Goldschmidt, a man who has been in a similar position where he was coming off a down year and then just produced massively. It was that, you know, the big season with the Cardinals a couple years ago, 2022, just an absolute massive season. People bought back in, and then last year was a disappointment. I just remember it closely. We were kind of waiting for things to happen all year, and we did a lot of blaming of Ollie Marmol, the manager. Granted, he deserved it. If you don't play Tyler O'Neill, you deserve to be fired. But like, it never happened for Goldschmidt. And I understand he's getting older, you know, in his mid-30s. But if you're just kind of digging into the numbers on Paul Goldschmidt, like, he really wasn't off his last previous seasons in terms of power, in terms of plate discipline. Like, he could still be solid. So I kind of see myself clicking on him. You got Ha-Sung Kim, the aforementioned, and then guys like Alex Bregman, Tristan Cassis, Josh Jung, and Christian Walker, and then, of course, his teammate Nolan Arenado. So between those guys, Goldschmidt, let's leave off Kim. He's a, you know, more of a middle infielder guy. So you got Goldschmidt, Bregman, Walker, the three veterans, and then you got the two kids, Cassis and Jung. What do you like there?
You know, Goldschmidt is safe. You know, one of those things in baseball or any sport, age is undefeated. Is he in decline? Is he going to have a bounce back? That's a big question we got to dive into and see what's going to happen. I'm leaning towards he's probably in a little decline. The swing and miss numbers kind of scared me a little bit from last year. That being said, really safe. But I'm probably leaning a little further down and looking at a Christian Walker or even a Torkelson or Cassis, and kind of taking a little more upside with a little bit of discount.
Yeah, this is kind of a tier I like. I'm in a rare position right now in a draft champions I'm in now where I don't have a first baseman, and I'm like in, you know, I'm past round 10 at this point. And again, not too worried. You kind of, you know, you do your research, like, you know the targets that you can sort of depend on later on. But I do not mind this area at all. But they are also specific roster construction fits, because it is hard to jump on an Alex Bregman or a Cassis or, you know, or Josh Jung if you don't really have stolen bases, right? At that point in the draft, the power there is obviously, you know, really nice. But roster construction always needs to be part of the equation. Bregman, there's something special about him from a real life perspective that kind of gets undervalued. His like plate discipline and patience, it's elite. It's like 99% elite. He's like one of three or four guys along with Yandy Diaz and Arias who basically like walk more than they strike out, which is incredibly rare in the league. He hits right around Altuve, Jordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker. I mean, you know, he's kind of like boring, but he produces. But again, the issue is if you're there in that draft, he's like a nice to have because he's nice and solid. But if you're hurting a little bit on steals, he's may not necessarily help you at that point.
Yeah. I guess a guy you talk about maximizing his skills for the ballpark. I think you put Bregman in any other ballpark, he's going to go down to probably in the teens home runs, but the Crawford boxes really help him out because his power data is not good. But his contact percentage is elite. His K percentage is elite. You're going to write down 90 runs, 90 RBIs, you know, going around pick 100, hard to complain. Like you said, if you have the speed, there's something to that safety of that pick and just kind of the write it in.
And then I have a little, I have some crushes in this area. One of those guys is Tristan Cassis, and I, you know, VDP, we've got him for a $20 value. And this is where, you know, basically where in a range where I've got like Goldschmidt and Machado closer to like $18. So that's how much, you know, the VDP system loves Tristan Cassis. And I think he's, you know, been talked about a lot. We remember the first half of the season where all the, you know, underlying metrics and the StatCast data was all elite. Like everything, you know, barrel rates, like, you know, was like 15% plus back then, just, you know, some bad luck, you know, some bad balls and play luck. And, you know, balls weren't getting over the fence, but you just kind of saw something there. And then those skills declined a little bit in the second half, or those underlying metrics, I mean, but then the production started to balance out along with it. And again, I might be just drinking a little Kool-Aid here. In fantasy, I don't have favorites here. This isn't like, oh, I like the Dodgers, let me draft Dodgers. It's like, you know, I don't care how I feel about the Red Sox personally. From an analysis perspective, this is a very interesting offense. And especially with all of the sort of the hate for, you know, management and ownership that is, seems like they're giving up, right? They're going to give away Kenley. They're just, you know, they're not drafting the right free agents. They're not adding really good starting pitchers. And like, you know, there's all this around it. But when you actually look at the top of the offense centered around Rafael Devers, and you got, you know, a guy like Tristan Casas coming up who can hit, you know, he can lead off technically even in that lineup. They have a bunch of lefties there. If Jaron Duran struggles whatsoever, Tristan Casas can come up and pick up the slack and, you know, drop 90 plus RBIs with 30 home runs. So there's a lot I like about him. But my question to you is, what am I not seeing? Why am I so biased by this one player? And not somebody I necessarily have to have in every single draft, because again, it's also a roster construction thing. I'm not going to just take him because I like him and needs to fit. But like, what am I not seeing with him and just like with the Red Sox that I'm liking too much about?
You know, what scares me about the Red Sox, you know, the lineup can be good. It can be iffy. I just had a choice between Casas and Christian Walker in my CLQ. And I took quite a while to look at it. And I end up going Walker. And I'm really interested to kind of hear why you have Walker behind Casas. It seems like a better lineup context with Walker. I think Casas is kind of that new fun thing where Walker's that established. But there's nothing I dislike about Casas, especially the up and coming aspect. Guy looks like a star, but there's some guys in that area, especially with Walker falling in ADP a little bit, is like, you know, sell me on Casas over Walker, I guess. Shooting it back at you.
Yeah, I don't even think I would overly sell it, because I would not besmirch, is that the right word? I would not hate on somebody for going with Christian Walker there. He's boring, but steady. Maybe he's not even boring. He's, you know, he's cool. But I call these guys like the John Posman, Dave Pott special. Wrote in my article. I hope, you know, they don't mind. I hope I don't have to pay them copyright. But like, John Posman and Dave Potts are both elite, high stakes players and have been for years, incredibly consistent, both Hall of Famers. And these are the type of prototypes that they draft, because their skill, I mean, you kind of have a good, like kind of small, like variance, like very little variance. You kind of know where they're going to land in things. With a Christian Walker, like, you don't know, he might steal 4 bases this year versus 13. And sure, that like throws off the value a little bit, but you know, a healthy Christian Walker with Corbin Carroll ahead of him is going to hit 30 homers. It's going to drive you in at least 90 runs. He's not going to kill you in batting average. He's got a sub 20% strikeout rate. So I really can't argue it. This is just where, you know, if I'm going kind of slow and steady and boring earlier in my drafts, I don't mind grabbing a Casas there, because there is a lot I like about it. Like, it's the fact that the guy's already showing, you know, elite levels of getting on base and plate patience, like a, you know, 15%, you know, walk rate for the guy. You know, he hit 15 bombs and drove in 40 and just over 200 plate appearances after the All-Star break. He's going to be there near the top of the lineup, hitting almost every day with Devers around him. And I don't know. So, I like both. I like both. Why not both?
Nothing to dislike, I guess. So it was interesting, kind of. It's kind of pick your flavor and enjoy it, because both of them are going to be really good.
So really quickly, because MLB draft season, it's here. And the easiest place to play fantasy baseball is at Underdog Fantasy. So we've already been active in their best ball formats and fantasy drafts, where you draft your team with 20 rounds and the best score from the team you drafted becomes your score each week of the MLB season. Drafts are constantly filling up each and every day. So check it out, Underdog Fantasy, right now, and draft in the Dinger. It's a $10 entry. You get your share of a $750K prize if you win, if you follow the VDPs, with first place being a cool $100,000. Again, only 10 bucks to draft. Tournament closes on opening day, March 28th. So jump in now. Sign up for Underdog. Use the promo code FTN and get your first deposit match up to $100. That's 10 free dinger drafts right there. So use promo code FTN and join Underdog today and get drafting for the upcoming MLB season. Torque Train. Torque Train. Are you on it? Are you on the Torque Train? That's Spencer Torkelson, Detroit Tigers.
I'm on it to the moon, Vlad. I'm a big fan of Torque. You know, just talking about the last two guys, I think Torque can outproduce them both, power and RBIs. If you can absorb the batting average, he's probably not going to hit above 230. There's a 40 home run profile in there. And, you know, what he did last year, once he kind of, you kind of saw it come out in the second half, and he's just getting better. You have prospect pedigree, and he looks like he's figuring it out. And I'm a big Torque fan.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are, you know, ballparks like Detroit, you know, there, I mean, that it's just the, because it's just the, an offense that has been so futile over the years, and we just haven't seen a lot of fantasy value out of there and talent, but there's something starting to brew a little, evolve. And then obviously, you know, he was a year ago, he was a major bust. He first overall pick, had a horrific rookie year. And then last year, man, I mean, granted, the average wasn't that great, 233. We weren't, you know, we're not expecting much there anyways. But man, the guy drove in 94 runs and scored 88 runs in this Detroit Tigers lineup. I mean, Riley Green wasn't there for, you know, for a little chunk of it. And so, yeah, I like him very much. He might be one of those rare Tigers since, like, you know, in the last 10 years to, like, actually get you, like, you know, triple digits in runs in RBI. It's really rare these days. A couple other guys in this range we'll just kind of touch on real quickly. Yandy Diaz, I think if you follow me at all, you know how much I love Yandy. And, you know, again, this is just everything the guy's done. You know, poster boy for my article last year where I'm looking at profitable players post 250 ADP. He delivered top 40 value last season. He had the fourth highest batting average in baseball at 330. He was, you know, tied with, you know, Soto and Freeman in on-base percentage. Guy was just a beast. Barrel, you know, I mean, his Statcast data, I mean, you know, 93 plus, 94 miles per hour average. Exit velocity was there, you know, over 90th percentile. Granted, still kind of a ground balls guy. You don't care. It hits you 15 homers, it's fine. But if you're looking around round 9, round 10 for some, you know, some runs and some batting average boost, I think Yandy's a good guy. I guess he just kind of needs to stay healthy too.
Yep. Nothing to add there.
Josh Naylor, he had kind of a weird line. He last year, he didn't quite get to 500 plate appearances, but he only scored 52 runs and he drove in 97. So, like, had the dude stayed healthy, he was kind of on pace for Matt Olson type runs. And yeah, it was kind of quirky. It's a little unique. I don't think you'll see anybody kind of projecting him for, you know, 100 plus RBI, but have you been in on the Naylor train at all?
He's really similar to Yandy, and I'm probably taking Yandy in that situation. You know, high batting average floor, hits the ball hard, but just doesn't elevate it. Just not really a huge fan. And that Cleveland offense scares me. I think you're looking at about a 20 home run, but a 300 batting average, which is effective. But probably not for me in that area.
All right. We got the next group here, and these are guys that are going between rounds 10 and 13, ADPs between 150 and 200 overall. I'm just going to list a bunch of guys that are going in this range, or at least, you know, per our ranks over at FTN. By the way, it's rankings, not ranks. I'll get into that little thing a little bit later. You could say ranks, but technically his rankings is correctly. But anyways, I won't be that guy right now. Jake Berger, Alec Baum, Brian Hayes, Noelvi Marte, part of that crowded Cincinnati group, his teammate Spencer Steer. Then you got Max Muncy, another red, Christian Encarnacion Strand. So with those guys, those are just guys that are going up until round 12. Berger, Baum, Hayes, Marte, Steer, Muncy, Encarnacion, Strand. Anyone stand out to you? Are you shopping in this range?
I am. And it's Jake Berger with a highlight for me. I don't know if I'm a little biased from having Matt Modica text me an emoji of a burger and a bomb last year every time he hit a homer, which is a lot of fun. But, I mean, the guy had 58 barrels, almost a 50% hard hit rate, and 118 max exit velocity. people are worried about Miami, the ballpark, but that kind of Statcast numbers, there's not a ballpark that really is going to contain that kind of power if he just gets a swing and miss in order. Getting a chance to play every day, I'm excited for the opportunity. Just in a bad offense, so you got to hope that you can kind of get enough RBIs and runs, but the power is legit.
I've had this kind of weird thing, and it maybe feels wrong. It's probably like a losing strategy. It's not quite a strategy, but like I'm ending up with Marlins on my teams. Like I've all of a sudden been, you know, getting a Jazz and then a Burger, and then all of a sudden I got like a mini, you know, Marlin stack. I mean, like I have avoided Josh Bell like the plague for years and years, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, 280 overall. Oh, let me dig in a little bit here. And it kind of works, right? I mean, you're not really starting him at first base. You may not even have to start him every week at corner. And, you know, I understand there's tough pitching in this division, but they're also playing their divisions less these days. But there is something that I like here with this offense. I think Jake Burger is really, Jazz Chisholm is the glue, but Jake Burger is a phenomenal part of that. And so there's even a little like balance stack going on with a Burger Arias combo too, because you're kind of getting a little bit of both worlds, and you know they'll hit a couple spots from one another. So I like him, and yeah, I mean, you know, why can't he hit 35 bombs again? So with you there. Muncy train, how do you feel about, why am I calling everything trains? I don't know. It's late. Maybe we'll record earlier one of these days. Max Muncy, you know, he's going to tank your batting average, but he's also going to always hit you at least 30 bombs as long as he's healthy. And the lineup is insane. Is he going to play every day?
This is one guy I'm out on, and I think you and I are not on the same page with it. I was looking at the splits and left-handed, he was, I think, at a 40 WRC plus. Obviously, not a big sample size, but, you know, is he a poor man Schwarber or the next Joey Gallo? He's getting older. The contact's getting worse, but he just came off a 40 homer, 105 RBI year. If he does that again, it's value. The batting average scares me tremendously. And then platooning with Chris Taylor, of all people, never thought I'd be scared of that, but I think it's a real possibility.
And it's funny because Chris Taylor is like kind of one of my fades. Just because, again, now as 10 years ago, I'm not digging into these things. Like, you know, I don't really know what Chris Taylor's strikeout rate is, right? I just know that the guy doesn't play every day yet still gets you 15 homers and 15 stolen bases. And, you know, that's the way I played 10 years ago. And obviously we continue to evolve and be better. And especially if we're competing against the best of the best, we want to be the best. We want to win money. We want to, you know, we want all that stuff. But I got to kind of be more cautious with things. I'm very open-minded to the non-Muncy kind of, you know, not going in that direction, because you're right. And there is a lot of goodness in this range too. You don't necessarily have to get those extreme guys. If you have solid home runs across the board, you don't necessarily need a Max Muncy there, right? And then guys like Alec Baum, who pops up in our projections as one of the, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of guys that hit over 285 this season, 290, but Alec Baum that's where he's projecting for us right now. So almost drove in 100 runs last year, basically in his sleep, like kind of quietly in that lineup. He's solid. Doesn't really matter where he hits. He's going to have good guys around him. Brian Hayes, excellent Statcast metrics. Kind of got to love what's going on at the top of that Pittsburgh lineup with O'Neill Cruz and Ryan Reynolds, who I think is a stud. So I'm into Brian Hayes as well. What I really can't figure out are the Reds. And I think that's like it's a conundrum for a lot of fantasy people. Encarnacion Strand, Marte, Steer. These are some of the hardest guys to evaluate, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the one that's really fallen and has become the hardest one to evaluate is Encarnacion Strand. I mean, the power, man, is incredible, and he's got a pretty good hit tool, but the playing time is so up in the air with India talking about playing first base. They just have one too many mouth to feed. Who's playing, who's sitting? Because I think one of the guys is going to break out at a really cheap price. You just got to pick the right one.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting range. Kind of wrapping up that top 200 there is Vinny Pasquantino, Isaac Paredes, Isak Paredes, I'm sorry, and Rhys Hoskins. So I think Rhys Hoskins is kind of the popular one. And it's not just because he, you know, just recently signed and joined the Brewers and had his ADP rise, but because he's been a popular guy, right? You just, you know, one of those guys, you know, isn't really going to help you with batting average. He used to produce a crap ton of runs for Philly. Now he's with Milwaukee. We'll see how everything shakes out over there, but usually a healthy Hoskins will get you 30 bombs, a lot of power there. Isak Paredes was phenomenal last year, very kind of unique profile if you really dig in over there. And then Vinny Pescantino to me is a guy that isn't getting a lot of love because he is coming off that season-ending injury last year, happened very early on. It's kind of off, you know, the radar, plays in Kansas City. He's, you know, just like a batting average guy with, you know, doesn't have, you know, might have the massive power, but we haven't quite seen it. And then he's going to get you no stolen bases. So I think like if we hear that Vinny is healthy, you're going to start to see him kind of rise up the boards, but not too much, right? He's not going to get past like, you know, 10th round, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, how can you have a guy nicknamed Italian Breakfast not rise in the draft? I like him a lot. Batting average, the shoulder injury scares me. Historically, short shoulder injuries just sap power. And he was more of a line drive guy, not a home run guy. So I'm a little iffy on him. I don't think I've ever seen a profile like Paredes having 8 more homers than barrels. It's not really sustainable.
Just like him and Seidel, I think.
Yeah. Great company to be in there, huh, Vlad? So, I mean, it's an interesting little group. I mean, the Hoskins, I think, is going to get undervalued. He's coming off an injury too. Like you said, it's an easy 30 homers. Milwaukee's lineup is going to be pretty poor. So I think he's going to get slept on a little bit, and it could be a nice cheap source of power this late in the draft.
All right, let's run through the guys around 200, 300 ADP. So this is your 14 to 20, rounds 14 to 20 in 15 teamers. You got a little bit of speed, really not much speed, right? Because you're not usually getting all that on the corners. But Mikel Garcia is a guy that can pop you 25. I don't think you pop stolen bases, but you know what I mean. 25 plus stolen bases from Mikel Garcia there. Luis Rengifo, he's got 4 positions of eligibility, which is nice probably for like the cut line format. And then he right now projects to lead off in roster resource. We'll see how that works out. I do think a guy like Zach Neto could get there. Maybe Taylor Ward leads off if he's healthy. So, you know, there's some interesting guys. And then you've got some veterans. This is like the range of all the crazy veterans. At the top of the 200s, you got Nathaniel Lowe, who's now become a veteran. You got Ryan Mountcastle, who I think some people worry that he'll be in a platoon, but I'm not worried about that. Brandon Drury hitting now 25 bombs a year now, you know, with the Angels now. Candelario in Cincinnati, who's supposed to play every day. You got Justin Turner turning 40 years old. And then you got guys like Ty France, Anthony Rizzo, Matt Chapman, Jose Abreu, Josh Bell, and Eugenio Suarez. So I just listed a lot of names. We're just like dropping stuff here towards the end, but let's talk about a few of these guys. Who stands out to you in this range as like a target and a fade?
Can we get a free Ryan Mountcastle out of Baltimore petition going? Because if he got traded out of there, I think he's, you know, a 40 homer bat. But that wall out in left field just suppresses his power so much. His homers are just, they're never going to be as high as they can in that lineup. He came back from vertigo last year and hit over 300 when he played. They were platooning him, which was strange. But looking at roster resource and the depth chart, they really don't have a platoon partner unless the kids come up and start playing, which they have a lot of. So it's a little concerning playing time, but I absolutely love that profile in Mountcastle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and even like, I mean, even with dealing with the vertigo and then, you know, towards the end of the season, he had was also dealing with an injury. The guy still had like a 317 ISO, nearly 400 OBP, did really well against both lefties and righties, then had that shoulder injury in September. And, you know, he lost some playing time early on in the year to Ryan O'Hearn, who just came out of nowhere. But yeah, I mean, there's lots of, like, I too would love to see him get traded somewhere else, but I also like to see him, you know, make it to the World Series with the Orioles. What about, I was going to ask you about Ty France. How much do things like doing driveline matter to you? And do you even like profiles like his, Jose Abreu's, guys that aren't stealing you bases, or does that not matter to you this late in the draft?
This late in draft, this little group feels like last year in this draft, it was Justin Turner and Yandy Diaz going in about the 16th to 20th round. That just felt like a no-brainer pick. I think you're looking at the Jose Abreu, the Suarez, even Chapman and Rizzo, those four. The value on those four, I think we're going to look back and kind of shake our head, man. That was a no-brainer. France, Driveline. I don't know. Driveline for pitchers is probably more interesting to me than hitters, but it helped J.P. Crawford tremendously last year, so it could help France, and he's always been a good bat-to-ball guy. So it's a nice little range to really shop in and find at least one, if not two, really productive hitters.
Yeah, and that's true, because you just named four guys that, I mean, could theoretically all get there and all, like, greatly out-earn their ADP. So say they're going in the late two, post 250, and you know that like a couple of those guys are going to end up being top 100 guys, right? And even Jose Abreu could bounce back a little bit from last season. Maybe he's, it appears as though he's on the decline, but and likely is, but he still nearly drove in 100 runs last season. He's still hidden in the middle of this fantastic Houston lineup. So those things can just come. And granted, he's 36 years old, but I still could see something there. Anthony Rizzo, he's a guy, he's starting to rise a little bit up the draft board. And because, if you're just looking at a guy that, if he can get you 500 plus plate appearances, 550, that the numbers are going to be there. They're going to be legit, especially for a guy going at like 270 overall. So I do like Rizzo. I do see him moving up, especially if there's good spring training news. And then I just wanted to say one fade for me, and I think this is kind of universal for me, is I think I'm just fading White Sox. Like, and I'm talking about Andrew Vaughn here, and I kind of had an anti-Vaughn bias, and it's nothing about him. I mean, he's a good baseball player, right? But I'm playing fantasy baseball, and the White Sox, I just don't see them scoring a lot of runs this year. It's kind of why I'm off on Luis Robert this year. I mean, come on. If you really look at this lineup, and they're adding, they added Martin Maldonado, Paul DeJong, Nicky Lopez, Dominic Fletcher. I mean, it's going to be really bad. And even like me liking Eloy Jimenez where he goes, even that maybe isn't worth the risk. So I don't know. No White Sox, right?
Yeah. I mean, that looks like a walking dumpster fire and just waiting to light a match. I mean, that looks a little scary. Just one other guy, and Matt Chapman, no major league team like wants him this year, it feels like, for some reason, but he had an extremely unlucky year last year. I kind of opened my eyes when I was looking at his stat cast. He had 59 barrels and 17 homers. That was shocking to me. And so if he gets in a decent ballpark, it could be, he could easily hit 30 homers in the right ballpark next year for hitting fifth or sixth in the lineup and be a good run producer. And, going down at pick 270, it feels like pretty good value.
Yeah. So in general, this is a great range to shop in. And yeah, Chapman was pretty studly. He's another guy that I just have not had interest in over the years, but I would absolutely do it around here. Now's a good time to get shares, because as soon as he signs somewhere, or he screws guys like Matt Mervis and Michael Bush yet another year, if he signs with the Cubs, for example, it's going to really sting, and you're going to want to get in that before that price rises. Let's finish things up here. Let's end your first pod here with just guys that are going after pick 300. So this is after round 20 and 15 teamers, and the last few rounds of 12 teamers. There are a lot of guys here with multi-position eligibility. You got Luke Rayleigh's on Seattle now. Willie Castro is the only guy that Rocco Baldelli has ever let run, since 2019, and he's got your third base outfield if you need some speed there. Ezekiel Duran, I don't know how much he's going to play. He wasn't even on the Rangers playoff roster to start last year, but he had a very productive couple stretches of last season. You could even look at like a Ryan Noda, very, very strange profile, like super high walk rate, just like swings at everything. It's really an odd profile, but the dude is going to play every day and score a ton of runs. I don't know about a ton. We're talking about Oakland here. But all of this to say is, bro, I think I am in on a couple of Giants here.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss if you're drafting Giants on offense. But with Bob Melvin, I think they have an opportunity to be a much more fantasy relevant team. And, you know, Flores every year just literally it blows. It's just Wilmer crazy. Flores? 20 homers, 70 RBIs. Yeah, Wilmer Flores and with multi-position usually by mid-year. And Wade is just a really good hitter, going to be in a good side of a platoon. And you don't want him facing lefties, so it's actually not a bad thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And these like Lamont Wade is a perfect kind of guy for like the draft champions, right? And I mean, I don't even know, like even based on this lineup, like I understand he's not amazing against lefties, but he's not like, you know, like the worst ever. And I mean, right now, whether roster resources is right or not, they don't have him in the platoon, you know, at least as it looks now. But then again, that could very well be wrong because, you know, Michael Conforto is another lefty, right? Mike Yastrzemski. They got three lefties there who you know could potentially sit. And then you got Jung-Hoo Lee at the top of the lineup. Most likely, he'll probably hit first or second. He's a lefty. He just hits everything. I think that guy's gonna be good. I think you guys are gonna have a lot of fun with Jung-Hoo Lee.
Yeah, nice consolation prize to Ohtani and Yamamoto. But I am excited about him. A couple other guys, Colt Keith, going to be third base and second base eligibility. He's probably going to rise probably mid 200s by the time, you know, this comes out or when the new data comes out. He's got a good hit tool, signed a big contract, so he's going to get every chance to earn that second base job. And then the other guy for me, I was in hard last year along with many other people that got burnt, was Rowdy. Roddy Tellez in Pittsburgh. I think they're going to give him a chance to play. His only competition there is Connor Joe. And from what he is saying, I take it with a grain of salt, he was injured last year. So be a good guy to take a flyer on as a late corner bench guy. And if he produces, hold on. If not, drop him.
Yeah, Colt Keith is an interesting one. So he is third base eligible on NFBC. And he's supposed to start the season at second base. May or may not be a platoon situation there with, I don't know, possibly like a, you know, Andy Ibañez. We'll see. He could definitely, you know, make something out of that there. But yeah, so Colt Keith is super interesting to me. Rowdy Tellez, I haven't really gone in on, but I don't mind it. Like you're talking about like, you know, way late power. And I think that can work. And then, do we end the episode with the possibilities of the ghost of Nick Senzel? Do we ask this for like the 17th year in a row? Is this the year that he can stay healthy?
Well, I may or may not have taken in with the last pick of my OC. I'm interested. The everyday third baseman to start. You got what, second pick of the draft. Can he stay healthy? Can he produce? He's finally getting an opportunity and not getting yanked around. I think it's worth a shot again to see early if he produces. If not, it's an easy cut.
I'm with you there. I like it a lot. And we cannot go and end this show without mentioning Kyle Manzardo. I am a big fan. I think I think Cleveland would be insane to not let him start with them in opening day. So he's a guy that I'm going to be following closely in spring training. We were out catching his home run derby balls in Arizona for the Arizona Fall League in early November. And man, I'm just enamored. It's like, you know, it's going beyond fantasy now. Like I really like this man as a baseball player.
And it's a great call. Yeah, great call. Got an opportunity to really, he's a good hitter. Had some personal stuff last year and really kind of fell off, but he's a good hitter. And I think Cleveland's got a winner there at first base. Just will they let him play?
Exactly. That makes sense. Oh, dude. So that's about it. I mean, what'd you think? First time being a co-host of a podcast. How'd it feel?
Oh, that's so much fun, Vlad. I want to keep going, but we only got so much time. Definitely had a blast, and you know, just really honored to be potting with you. You know, you're one of my for early idols in the industry, and I don't say that just to blow smoke. You know, you and you're one of the nicest guys that I've met, and it's legit. And I really appreciate you having me on, appreciate the friendship, and can't wait to see you in Vegas.
Yeah, you too, man. I really appreciate that. And yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun this preseason. We'll have some awesome guests on and just, you know, just keep the analysis going, help people prepare and crush their drafts. Next week, we are going to talk about the second baseman and the shortstops. We'll dig into Ellie and we'll dig in, you know, to all the guys that are interesting, all the Cruises, except for Brian Della. He's an outfielder, so we won't talk about him. You can follow Jason Anthony at Booms62. Make sure to subscribe to FTNFantasy.com if you have not already. Get in on that code SEAGER5, get 5% off. Everything you need is there and more. Anything you want, we will make. So please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. For your new co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.